Talk Central is brought to you by BlackBerry.
Hi, this is Diplo. I'm just out there mixing ideas and mixing up different genres. I can't believe that people are actually paying me to travel across the world and build new sounds, different artists. The BlackBerry Torch makes it simple because I'm always staying in touch with everybody, whether it's using Twitter applications or Facebook. A lot of these guys, I have a closer relationship now because I'm constantly on BBM talking to them.
Pop.
I love what I do. And a BlackBerry Torch helps me do it.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Afternoon.
So we're both suffering with a bit of a cold / flu. Winter seems to be coming on outside. The temperature's plummeting. But on with the show.
Indeed, the show must go on, as the infamous Freddie Mercury once said.
It's been a great week, actually. We had our first pub quiz on Tuesday, and that went off very well.
Oh, I had an absolute ball, and I'm sure some of all the contestants had fun, and the questions were tough, but everybody had a ball.
Yeah, no, the questions were quite tough, and I saw quite a few people shaking their heads, looking rather perplexed during the quiz. But it went off very well, and our quizmaster, Aki Anastasiou, did an absolutely fantastic job in the evening. And well done to all the guys who won prizes, and thanks to our sponsors for the evening, Vodacom and Incredible Connection, for sponsoring the prizes, especially the iPad 2 from Vodacom and a laptop, courtesy of Incredible Connection. So thanks for coming, for those who were there, and we'll do the next one in the next, probably in the next 3-4 months or so.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, though.
It was a lot of work, but I think it was worth it. It was
definitely. We had such fun.
It was a great evening. And the venue, the Baron & Main in Bryanston, was also very good, well managed, and kudos to them.
Special thanks to the staff that worked that night. It was chaos, and they really upped their game, and they were so accommodating to us, and it was just really great.
Yeah. For those who weren't there, we're going to publish the list of questions, so you can take a look at just how tough they were. Perhaps try your hand at the quiz if you weren't there that evening and see how many of the questions you got right, but we'll get that up in the next couple of days. Great, so on with the news. Busy news week on the cell phone front at the Advertising Standards Authority once again. Vodacom and Cell C, I think we chatted about this briefly, the story was just starting to break last Friday, but Vodacom took Cell C to the Advertising Standards Authority to object to its latest series of campaign adverts claiming to be South Africa's leading mobile broadband network, and taking aim at Vodacom and its rebranding to the colors of its parent Vodafone's red and white. And let's just say Vodacom did not take kindly to to Cell C's campaign, and lodged a detailed application at the Advertising Standards Authority, which it effectively won on all counts at the Advertising Standards Authority's urgent meeting, which was held this week, or hearing, which was held this week. They found pretty much against Cell C and in favor of Vodacom in all aspects of Vodacom's complaint. But the story is still going to run for a while. I was interested to see that that Vodacom has asked for what they call sanctions to be applied against Cell C by the Advertising Standards Authority. They effectively regards Cell C as a serial abuser when it comes to these sort of the campaigns it's been running. It's lost, according to Vodacom, 6 complaints which have been brought against it in the last year.
The trouble is, the punishment for a serial abuser is quite hefty. They have to pass all their advertising through the authority.
One of the options, as I understand it, is they would then have to seek pre-authorization to run any campaign or advertisement from the Advertising Standards Authority to ensure that it meets the ASA's codes and rules. Which is a serious sanction. I mean, no company would want to have their advertising material sanctioned before sending it out there.
Do you think that Vodacom's overreacting about this?
I don't know. I think they could have. I think they could have perhaps had a bit more of a sense of humor about it.
But it's difficult when you're about to spend $400 million on a rebranding.
I see this outside of the story. I mean, They are spending a lot of money on this rebranding campaign, and Cell C is certainly being cheeky in effectively, I guess, trying to ride their coattails on this issue. And I mean, I think consumers love it. I think most consumers love what CLC is doing and sticking it to the big guy. I mean, I wrote a column last week suggesting that Lars Reichelt is kind of styling himself as the David taking on the Goliath in the industry. The Goliath is getting rather hacked off with this David and is now starting to retaliate.
Yeah, so it's a difficult one. I really don't. I can see both sides of this. I think that as a smaller player in the market, CLC has to be the cheekier operator. They have to come up with guerrilla marketing campaigns to take on their bigger rivals. At the same time, I understand that Vodacom is investing one heck of a lot of money in this rebranding campaign, and I can see the side of the story. So, yeah, Vodacom perhaps should have been had a little bit more humor about this, but I can also understand why they didn't. At the same time, I understand the need for CLC to be quite aggressive and bold in its advertising campaigns, but perhaps it was
a little step too far.
Perhaps it was a step too far in attacking Vodacom in this particular way.
But I think that the real story is the behind the scenes story with the advertising agencies, and that's a really interesting story in and of itself.
Yeah, we broke that story earlier this week. A heck of an interesting story. Grant Jacobson, who used to work as executive creative director at Draft FCB, which is the ad agency for Vodacom, left the end of December to join a rival agency, DDBSA. DDBSA then won a contract or a pitch. That they presented to CLC for this particular advertising campaign. Now, I know that both Vodacom and Draft FCB are extremely upset about the fact that the guy who was working on their campaign and working on some of the initiatives around the rebranding left to go and work at an agency that then produced campaigns that attacked the same sort of messaging that he was working on at the previous agency. Now, there've been a lot of comments on this, and I mean, there's dozens of comments on the story on Tech Central, and some of them really quite interesting. It's worth actually going to have a look through some of those comments. A range of issues that have been raised here, but I just find it. I think it says something about the advertising industry and the way perhaps they need to clean up their act and maybe deal with these sort of conflicts of interest. And perhaps Draft FCB ought to have restrained this guy in some way.
Well, that's exactly the issue. I mean, now they're considering court action against Grant Jacobson, I understand. But really, it was at the end of the day, a little bit of a lack of oversight there, where they could have restrained him from working on any of the competing mobile operators' campaigns and didn't.
Mm. Of course, Grant Jacobson says that, there was no malicious intent here and he didn't share any confidential Vodacom information with CLC, and says that the campaign was drawn up at the last minute after Vodacom's new branding became clear in the market. He says that, for example, they were shooting the ad late at night on a Friday night on the 1st of April, which is the same day Vodacom announced its new colors and brand, and was working through the weekend on edit and post-edit and that sort of thing. It's difficult to know where the truth lies here, but
probably somewhere in between.
But it's certainly something I think the advertising industry needs to look at and perhaps to deal with a bit better. I'm sure this won't be the last time this kind of incident happens. Just happened in this case. It was over a high profile issue around one of the biggest rebranding exercises in the country's history. We don't know if Draft FCB and or Vodacom are going to take legal action against DDB or against Grant Jacobson. I guess we'll just have to wait and watch and see what they decide to do. But they are very, very, very angry.
The story is definitely not over. And it's something that's going to, I think it's going to prove to have a lot of impact on both industries, on both the mobile industry and the advertising industry. And I think we're going to have to keep an eye out on exactly what that impact will be.
What's really interesting for me, and I expressed this opinion in my column this week, is what this actually says about competition in the mobile sector. I think it signals that competition is getting much more brutal out there. CLC, the point I made was that MTN and Vodacom, they have absolutely competed with each other, but they haven't been aggressive in competing, especially on the voice side of things. If one does happen to cut their prices in one area, the other will tend to follow with something similar. And their prices have always been very similar. But in the data space now, with Cell C being particularly so aggressive, I think we're starting to see the beginnings of what could become a price war. I'm not going to say there will be a price war, but I think we are seeing this market reaching a degree of competitiveness. Also with the introduction of Telkom's ATA and mobile network into the country, which has added an additional competitive element. I think that the mobile telecommunications market, which was perhaps a little cozy for quite a long time.
Well, it was.
It was. Let's face facts here. Our voice tariffs are by no means the lowest in the world. Probably not the highest either, but you know there was a cozy-ish relationship between Vodacom and MTN. I'm not suggesting that they actively colluded with one another. I don't think that is the case, certainly not post the famous London Agreement in the early 90s where they got together to agree on certain things.
But I think there was enough pie in the South African market for the two operators. Mm. And now there's
two more.
There's two more and they're becoming more aggressive.
Yeah.
And that pie is shrinking. So that's something that they'll
the market is maturing. Yeah. And there's a land grab going on for broadband data.
Yes.
And it's really being fought in the mobile market rather than the fixed line space. I mean, obviously there's competition between ADSL internet service providers, but in the mobile market, you've got four guys all hungry to grab market share. So I don't think we've seen the end of this. And I think we're going to see further price reductions in mobile data, not necessarily from Cell C's side because their prices are already very aggressive, but I think we may see MTN and Vodacom and possibly ATA responding with lower prices, and I think that might happen quite soon.
Well, Vodacom has already tried their response with their 2 gig package at 149 rand, which is priced at the same price as Cell C's. They've also added the 2 gig of data after midnight, between midnight and 5 a.m.
Yeah, when you can use. No one actually wants to use that.
Well, I was reading some tweets around that, and Vodacom says that it's basically to handle those pesky Windows updates, which happen at unruly hours.
What? I think Windows updates happen whenever Microsoft decides to send them to you. Oh, if you're going to ask for them, you're not likely to ask for them at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And I would rather do that on my ADSL line, to be honest.
Absolutely. Although, you know, mobile broadband is already a much bigger market in terms of number of subscribers than DSL market, and would continue to outpace the growth of the DSL market.
I think what would have been really fun with this whole saga that's broken this week would have been if MTN had stepped over and done their own little campaign, you know, while Vodacom and Cell C were squabbling, and then MTN would come out with a new fun campaign. But yes. I was hoping it would happen, and it didn't. But
they could have come up with something very clever. They could have had a picture of a children's play park, for example, with two kids, one in red and one in black, sitting in a sand pit throwing sand in each other's faces, and then you could have you know, a guy in a bright yellow T-shirt, an adult or something like. Watching this and shaking his head. Well, you know, there's a whole lot of options they could have come up with.
But. There are many ideas that they could have, and it would have been so much fun if MTN had entered the fray, because that kind of, it might have even put a stop to the whole angriness about the thing, to just show that, yes, this is an issue, and yes, it's happened, but it would have actually added to the humor of the whole thing.
Absolutely.
I think it would have raised the humor on both Cell C and Vodacom side.
ATA could have done the same thing.
Exactly,
I think maybe the agencies missed a trick there. Well, it's not too late, you know. This thing is still going on.
That's true.
And it does take a bit of time to develop campaigns. So maybe they will come up with something. But there you go, MTN. If you haven't thought of it, give us the credit if you do it. Cool. Well, let's move on a little bit. Big news this week. In fact, it's an extension of a story which we broke last year about a company called E5 Telecoms building a new high-capacity cable to link South Africa, Angola across the southern Atlantic Ocean to Brazil. I met with their CEO, Lawrence Mulaudzi, a couple of days ago now, and he gave me some updated details on the plan. The cable now has a name, South Atlantic Express, or SAEX, and it's going to be quite a high-capacity cable. If you haven't seen the story, just to give you a quick sort of overview of it, it's going to consist of four fiber pairs of 3.2 terabits per second each. That's the design capacity, not the initial available capacity. And that's using 40 gigabits per, gigabit per second wavelength technology. They're talking about at some point in the future upgrading that to 100 gigabit per second dense wave division multiplexing technology, which is basically just a way of squeezing data through a piece of fiber and using very clever technology. But they're talking about taking it to what's called 100 gigabit per second dense wave division multiplexing technology, which would then allow them to take the design capacity of this cable up to an astonishing 32 terabits per second. Now, what they're planning to do, what they're talking about doing at this stage, and they still have to sign the construction and maintenance agreement, which will be with a joint venture of Alcatel-Lucent and the Chinese government. But they're looking to build four fiber pairs from Fortaleza, which is on the north coast of Brazil, across the ocean to a branching unit, I presume somewhere along the African coast. And those four fiber pairs will then be split in two. So you'll have two fiber pairs going to Angola and two fiber pairs extending down to Cape Town and then around the coast to Mthunzini on the KwaZulu-Natal coast, where it will connect onward with the SEACOM system, which then goes up towards India and to Europe. Interesting new project. It's got the backing this week of the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and the new entrant to BRICS, South Africa, hence the S on the end of BRIC. We've recently admitted a big meeting of the presidents and leaders in China over the last few days, and they've agreed to give this cable system their blessing. And it's an interesting cable system because it's going to kind of link these fast growing emerging markets, running from South America, Brazil, through to South Africa, and then up to India, and then onward on Southeast Asian cable systems, which already exist, onto China and other markets in the region.
Well, this effectively makes it a global cable.
Well, not really, because they're going to be connecting onto other cable systems, but it effectively provides a direct connection through the Southern Hemisphere, if you like, between China and Brazil and India, a key market. And, using cables like SEACOM, and then I presume things like CMIWE 4, which runs through parts of Southeast Asia, and et cetera. So it's exciting. I think this is a great project. And the exciting thing for me is that it's going to provide a more direct route to the US, because it's going to connect to the GlobeNet system, which is the big, massive 22,000 kilometer system that connects many of South America's countries with North American countries. And so there'll be a route onward to the US. So traffic won't have to travel up the west coast of Africa all the way into London and then all the way across the North Atlantic to the US, which is what obviously the bulk of the world's internet servers are located. So
that will do a lot for our latency, which
it will improve our latency, absolutely.
That we've been missing for quite some time.
I mean, we're still a long way away, so latency is still going to be there, but it is a more direct route to the US market and an alternative route for providers. So all round, it's good news, and good luck to them.
Indeed. It's quite exciting stuff. We've had this flood of cables coming to South Africa and Africa, and we can expect to see, off the back of all of these, some really exceptional economic growth with the increased penetration of broadband across the continent. So I think that, the more the merrier. Bring it on.
Yeah, and it's going to provide an alternative route across to the East Coast, which I think is important, because they're planning to extend this cable around to Mthunzini, whereas, as I understand, both WAX and ACE, the two new cables coming along the West Coast, end at Cape Town. So, and then they're working with FiberCo, which is this new joint venture project between Cell C Convergence Partners and Internet Solutions, to provide national fiber capacity. So even if the cable system between Cape Town and Mthunzini goes down, we could route the traffic across South Africa to Mthunzini.
Which is fantastic news. I mean, the local fiber, the internal fiber capacity that we're expecting over the next couple of months or years is also going to make big changes in South Africa, and it's really going to commoditize the broadband space, which is excellent news.
Good. Candice, I think we need to take a break there. We will be right back after these messages.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like taxis and rush hour. Ah! But we do give a hoot. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and box-to-box calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. Candace, I see LTech put out a bit of a profit warning this week. They warned that their basic headline earnings per share, or rather their basic earnings per share, will be down by between 55% and 65%. And I was interested in this because they're largely blaming the write-down of goodwill in the East African market, where they've made a number of acquisitions in recent years. Now, I'm sure you've been to the LTE presentations, and you know, just as recently as a year ago, they were talking up East Africa as the boom region and one of the most important parts of their business, and this is where the future engine of the LTE growth story is going to come from. Now they're writing off goodwill, which suggests that they've overpaid for the acquisitions that they made there.
Well, funnily enough, a year ago, East Africa was the boom market. I mean, they showed growth of more than 30% the year.
By all accounts, it's still a boom market. I mean, the cable systems have gone in there. There seems to be a massive investment happening, fiber to the home projects, 3G, you name it. It seems to be happening up in Kenya. I think what the problem is that when LTech went in there, it was still a very much an underdeveloped space, and they were able to, achieve sort of profit margins which perhaps they wouldn't have been able to achieve in markets like South Africa. And I think the situation in Kenya particularly has just changed so dramatically in the last 12 to 18 months that the market has gone from being highly uncompetitive to highly competitive.
Well, I've been speaking to analysts over the last couple of days regarding this particular statement. None of them have agreed to go on the record, unfortunately. But they've all said that the market there has changed over the last 18 months and it has become more competitive. And that's most likely the reason why LTech has had to write down this goodwill. What's happened was that LTech came in, built the fiber. It was one of the first. It could sell it at a premium. And none of the other companies thought this was such a great idea, and they all dived into their own fiber. Now we have infrastructure in Kenya that's so saturated, that competition is so fierce, that the margins are lower and lower.
I mean, astonishingly in Kenya, just to talk about the level of competition, the regulators there and the equivalent of our communications minister in that market are even sort of flirting with the idea potentially of putting price floors on operators' tariffs, because the prices have come down to such an extent that they're worried that the industry is going to be damaged.
I mean, it's quite possible. I've been looking at the tariffs in Kenya, and just the voice tariffs are just scarily low.
Yeah, I mean, Bharti Airtel, which is the big Indian operator, has cut voice tariffs there to about 8 cents a minute.
And it's the infrastructure market is as competitive now over the last 18 months. And, I think LTech is faced with a situation where they got a little bit unlucky, because it really was a great business to buy into. And it really was a very big opportunity for massive growth. But unfortunately, they maybe didn't have as much of an advantage in terms of time to deliver with the other competing operators getting in on the same action.
So Eltek is reporting its results on Wednesday, and we'll be there, and we'll be interviewing the CEO, Craig Fanta. It's going to be an interesting one, just to look at the pressures that they're under and how they're planning to deal with it. I mean, not only has East Africa become problematic, but the South African market, they're also facing intense competition and regulatory challenges. If you look at Eltek Autopage Cellular and the reduction wholesale interconnection rates, which has affected their least cost routing business, putting pressure on margins. Eltek, from being a growth story a couple of years ago, now looks like a company under quite a bit of pressure. So it's going to be quite interesting to listen to Craig Fanta and hear what he has to say about how they're going to deal with these issues and what they actually see, how they see these pressures playing out over the next couple of years.
Absolutely, and they definitely need an action plan, both in East Africa and in South Africa.
Cool. Candice, I think another nice short show this week. I think just before we wrap up, I'd like to talk a little bit about Centec. You attended the press conference hosted by the chairman and the CEO in the last couple of days. The same day or the day before, I was attending a presentation by the GSM Association, which is the huge industry association which represents most of the world's mobile operators. The GSMA representative was highly critical of Centec's plans to build a wireless broadband network, saying that they're absolutely crazy to try and build a network at using the 2.6 gigahertz frequency band, which they have a big chunk of spectrum in. Suggesting that the best option is to allow is to use lower frequency spectrum, perhaps the digital dividend spectrum that's going to be freed up when broadcasters moved from analog to digital terrestrial television, to provide services in outlying areas. Just explain the reason why the lower bands are more suited for rural communications is you don't need to build as many base stations, and the signal tends to penetrate deeper and further. So it's cheaper to deploy at that frequency rather than deploying at the much higher frequency. The GSMA spokesman suggested that 2.6 is much more suited to deploying mobile broadband in dense urban areas where you do need a lot of coverage and where you do have to put up a lot of base stations to serve demand. In the rural areas, he said, much more sense to do it at 900 or below megahertz. He also said that that Centec should really be focusing on its core business of distributing broadcast signals, television and radio signals, rather than trying to involve itself in rolling out a wireless broadband network, suggesting that the mobile operator should be left to get on with the job of doing that. Of course, he has a bit of a vested interest there, since the GSMA represents the mobile operators. But interesting comments. Did you have a chance to ask the Centec executives about what the GSMA had said?
I did. Their argument is that the market has failed in terms of rolling out broadband, even wireless broadband, fixed broadband, to the areas or to the specific targets that they're focusing on. And that's underserviced schools and underserviced clinics in the country. He says that the longer we wait to roll out this network, the longer these students will be left outside of the economy. Because his argument is, the longer that these students don't have access to the internet, the less likely they will be able to fit into the digital age. Centec really wants to get this stuff out and really wants to boost the economy in terms of giving access to these technologies.
But you go to these rural schools, and I've been to a lot of them. They've got real challenges in terms of infrastructure. Many of them don't have electricity. You know, some of them don't even have roofs. They certainly don't have computers. And you need some sort of computing device to be able to access the internet. I mean, delivering a wireless broadband network is all well and fine, but how are these kids going to get online?
Well, I think that the plan is still has still got a lot of development before it will be implemented. And I think that what Centec might consider is a partnership agreement with a technology provider to bring these technologies to schools, obviously assuming they have electricity and, as you say, roofs.
these are basic assumptions. I mean, you can't make these assumptions. Many of these schools are in incredibly rural and poor areas where they don't have this infrastructure. I mean, some of them don't even have desks.
Well, there's also the government computing centres, which Centec is hoping to connect as well, and possibly get students and clinicians into those areas or into those centres to learn about the internet and to learn to access the internet and use it to their advantage. The question around using 2.6 over a lower frequency like digital dividend or 800 megahertz is that the digital dividend will only become available in 3 years, and Centi doesn't want to wait that long to bring those services to market, which I sort of understand. I think they want a piece of their access pie, and that's fair, and I'm still not sure that Centec is doing the right thing by rolling out a broadband network. And I kind of agree with the GSMA in that Centec needs to focus on its broadcasting services.
I just get the impression, and I missed the press the Centec press conference, which you attended, but I get the impression that they haven't fully thought this thing out. They're not dealing with the issues of how they're actually going to get the internet into people's hands. They're just talking about rolling out a network. They're not talking about how to get the computers out there and all that sort of thing. And they're talking about doing it at a frequency which the GMSA says is not the right frequency to try to do something like this at. Surely they should be engaging with the policymakers and looking at maybe trying to get spectrum in the 800 megahertz using white space, using geographic interleaving like Neotel has done for its CDMA network, which it runs just at around 800 megahertz.
A couple of issues that sort of negate what you're talking about here, Duncan. The first is that Centec doesn't want to be a service provider. It doesn't want to provide any internet directly to a consumer. They're not going to go into the school and say, here's your internet access. What they're doing is they're providing the coverage, the actual access layer of the internet provision, which then will be backhauled via InfraCo. What they're hoping will happen then is that other providers will come in at a very low cost because the infrastructure is in and they're not asking for a capital recuperation on that. So basically, the infrastructure is written off. And they can then charge lower prices to allow other providers onto that access to provide the service itself. Basically, what they're doing is they're providing the wireless local, the wireless last mile, the local loop, where other providers will run over the top of that. So they're, again, just distributing the signal rather than being the retail side of it, actually selling to the schools.
But you still think they need to talk to the Department of Basic Education about getting computers into these schools before actually talking about rolling out the infrastructure.
The second issue, which I think is at the heart of this issue, is that it personally feels like Centec's decision to roll out the broadband network is not actually Centec's decision.
It feels like
The Department of Communications is mandating this under its national broadband plan.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Roy Padiachi, the Minister of Communications, has said on a number of occasions that he wants Centec to roll out this network. Centec is acting under instruction from the DOC. There's no doubt about that.
And I think that they're building the plan to as much of the extent as they can in terms of what the DOC wants and will allow it to be revealed. And I think that's where Centec's sort of feeling like they don't have a proper plan comes from. I think they do have a plan. I just don't think that they can give too much away just yet.
Because the politicians haven't told them all the, you know,
anyway. All the necessary steps that they need to follow, or all the necessary things that need to be implemented. On the more exciting side, having spoken to the new chairman, Logan Naidu, and the new CEO, Dr. Sutuma Mohapi, I'm actually really heartened by Centec as a business. I think that a new culture and a new excitement has been driven into the company. And I think that's what they needed.
That's for sure.
And I'd love to see them act on this, because a lot of what we've heard so far from Centec has been the planning phases. This is the plan. And I actually spoke to Dr. Mohapi about this, saying that we need to – it's really nice to see that Centec is looking up, but what we need now is some implementation. What we need now is some – idea of their actual action on all of this stuff that they're planning.
Yes.
So we'll see, you know, how it works out. And I'd like to think that a lot of people will give them the time to give it a go. I'm a little bit nervous that it's at the expense of the taxpayer. But I'm hoping that that this new leadership will turn this business around.
Great. Candice, well, let's leave it there. We'll definitely be keeping our eyes very firmly fixed on Centec. And I think it's time to go and wrap up warmly and get ready for what looks like going to be a very cold, wet Johannesburg
indeed
this weekend. So, good. Let's leave it there. Until next time, thanks for listening to the show. If you've got any feedback, you can always email us at info@techcentral.com.
www.vox.co.za. From myself, Duncan McLeod, and Candace Jones, we'll chat to you again this time next week. Bye-bye.